So my name is Amy Hoffman, and I've worked with other two UNT students, Christy Winstead and Laura Ellison, on this project. So what we're looking at is local dietary trends and inter-site connections at an ancestral Puebloan site in southwestern Colorado. This way. Okay. Okay. So what we have here is ancestral Puebloan people. Okay, they occupied the southwestern Four Corners region, southwestern United States, for over 1,000 years. And at the peak of their population, they built lots of large structures. So here's an example of Chaco Canyon, and they built the cliff dwellings up in Mesa Verde also. And then around AD 1300, they left the area permanently. Okay, so we have the Mesa Verde region. And archaeologists believe they went to the Hopi, Zuni, and then over the northern Rio Grande area. So what we're looking at is, what was their diet like? They have this rise in population, growing population. What are they eating? What are they concentrating on? And then at the end, or right before they leave the area, do they have a lot of dietary stress and limited resources, along with violence that's going on in the area? So this is an overview of this central Mesa Verde region, so right at the Four Corners. So this population, Kohler et al. Did in 2009, and we can see the different time periods the archaeologists have set up: Basket Maker 3, Pueblo 1, Pueblo 2, Pueblo 3. And in the central Mesa Verde region, we get a little spike in population in Pueblo 1 here. And then in Pueblo 2, we have a steady increase in population, and then a decrease here during mid to late Pueblo 3. All right, so it's not just a simple kind of rise-fall, like I just kind of explained. It's a very complex situation that's going on. We have the environment that's playing a factor on how they can grow crops. We have cyclical, kind of wet and dry periods. And so we have this rising society that likely rose over the carrying capacity of what the environment could support. All right. So with faunal resources, we also have violence during and droughts that correlate with changes in cultural types, or from Pueblo 1 to Pueblo 2. And the aggregation of settlements, a little at the end of Pueblo 2 and then also Pueblo 3. So with faunal remains, what other people like Driver have found, we have large game that's taken in these earlier sites, like artiodactyls, deer, so forth, and jackrabbits. During Pueblo 2, when their population is increasing, we have a lot of turkey domestication. So they're relying not only on agriculture, dryland agriculture, but they're also relying a lot on turkey. And during terminal P3 at the end, they're relying more on cottontail rabbit and less on turkey domestication. So what we looked at is this regional, larger regional trend similar to a local trend? We have a lot of sites within this region here. Okay, so southwestern Colorado. So you can see their ancestral Puebloans span across the Four Corners region. Well, we have a Goodman Point Pueblo unit, and this is the unit. Lots of different sites. So Crow Cane Archaeological Center has surveyed all these sites and excavated a few of these, and then we've gotten the remains here at UNT and sorted through faunal remains. And we've classified them into different temporal periods. So what's neat about this unit is we have a lot of sites and they span a long range in time. So we can look at this local diversity. We have three Pueblo 2 sites: Pinion Place, Bluebird House, and Windy Knob. So all these, they're really close together sites within a mile of each other, pretty much the same kind of community. And these are little hamlets. And then during Pueblo 3, which is early to mid-Pueblo 3, we have Rain Ridge and Lupine Ridge. And then at the end, everyone aggregates into Goodman Point Pueblo, a large village that's over here. It's a little hard to see on this map. We've got creeks. This is centered around a water resource, so they were going through a drought at the time. This was occupied for the last 20 years, Goodman Point Pueblo, with a large, large population here, centered in here, along with violence. There's also violence in the region. A lot of their crops were around this area. So we wanted to see first, are these, can we group them into larger categories? So all the Pueblo II sites, are they similar to each other? Or are there all six sites that we looked at all similar in faunal community? So we expect them to be the same kind of faunal community because they're right next to each other in the same environment. So we used nestedness to see if this was true. We also have a lot of small sample sizes with our sites, so this would help us to see if the large sample sizes, such as Guman Point Pueblo, the large village, and the other ones are nested within that large village here. So here is an example of a nested. So A would be an example of Guman Point Pueblo with a lot of faunal remains, and then C here would be a smaller site, like Bluebird House. And then we have a non-nested assemblage here, so it's a little bit more random. And we can see that, you know, B has a few different taxa than A. So we have species here in the columns and then sites here in the rows. And we put it in a nestedness temperature calculator and then looked at what number it gave us. A 0 would mean that it was completely nested, and 100 means it's not nested. Keep wanting to change. So here our results show that it is very nested. It's 0.71. And then this list of species is a little small, but those four that I mentioned earlier, jackrabbit, cottontail, deer, and turkey are all up there. And turkey are more present in the Pueblo III sites, like I mentioned before. And so here are the sites of Guman Point, lots of different species. And we're still doing ongoing IDs for these other sites, but right now they're very similar to Guman Point Pueblo, even though the sample sizes are low. Okay, so here's an example of, so we did NISP, number of identified specimens, which is specimens at bone fragment or a complete bone. NSP is number of specimens, and this is the percent we were able to identify out of the faunal remains. They're roughly all around 50%. And Terminal P3 is Guman Point Pueblo, over 8,000 animal remains. Pueblo 3, 719. And then we have a fairly low sample size for Pueblo 2 sites. Okay. So our main questions that we wanted to focus on, well, all these six areas are fairly similar, but do they differ in taxonomic and prey choice? And then how do these local trends compare with the larger regional trends? So to look at prey choice, we looked at the percentage of key taxa within these three groups, the Pueblo II group, the Pueblo III group, and the Terminal Pueblo III group, and then we used the Turkey Cottontail Index. So a lot of Southwestern archaeologists and other archaeologists, they look at the proportions of different animals that they find in the sites. We chose turkey and cottontail because they're the big game for when our sites are occupied, turkey during P3 and cottontail during Terminal P3. All right, so the turkey cottontail index is 0 to 1, and 1 means that lots of turkey domestication going on. 0 means no turkey domestication going on. Okay. So this is the percentage of the sites here on the y-axis, and then we have our four key taxa here, artiodactyls, jackrabbits, turkeys, and cottontails. So you can see Pueblo 1, and like I said, it has more large game. It's still not a very big percentage of the site, but we have proportionally more artiodactyls and jackrabbits during earlier time periods than other time periods. And artiodactyl decreases here, jackrabbit decreases, turkey's high during Pueblo 3, and then cottontail is high during Terminal Pueblo 3. So the same kind of regional trends we've seen before. The artiodactyl kind of shoots up when the turkey decreases a little bit. And the turkey cottontail index shows pretty much the same thing as the other slide. We have in Pueblo 2, not that much concentration on turkey. The highest in Pueblo 3 was around 0.6. And then Terminal Pueblo 3, it shrinks down again. Okay. So this is what's going on within our unit over time. We have Shields Pueblo. Wow, damn. Okay. Shields Pueblo here, right across the street. And so Rawlings looked at the faunal remains in 2006 at Shields Pueblo. And so how does our unit compare to just the one up across the street? So that Pueblo was occupied from 750 to 1280, so around the same, a little bit earlier than us. And we see kind of similar trends. We have a lot of artiodactyl here, same percentage of the site. A lot of Turkey and mid, early to mid P3, and then mid to late Pueblo 3, that drop in Turkey, and then a slight increase in legomorphs. And they have a lot more legomorphs here in Pueblo 2. It's slightly different than what we see, but this could also be due to a lot of plowing that was done. And we're still comparing ours to Rawlings 2006. All right, Badenhurst and Driver and other xeroarchaeologists, and the study in this region have also looked at larger regional trends. So for instance, Driver and Badenhurst in 2009 looked at 559 sites throughout the region. And so we see here percentage of sites. So for instance, they did 77 of those sites, fell into Pueblo 2 category here, and they compared turkey versus legomorphs, legomorphs including both cottontails and jackrabbits. And our site is about right here. Our turkey index is a little bit different, but it's a little less on the common side. So a lot of the sites, almost 55% of the sites during Pueblo 2 in this region have above 50% of really low turkey. In Pueblo 3, that shift, that trend shifts, and then we see here that ours is pretty much in the middle, with about 20% of sites being similar to ours during that time period. And they don't have the terminal Pueblo 3. So just going back to this slide, we see a decrease in artiodactyls. So this is the similar, very similar trends that we see locally in our small community. Decrease in artiodactyls and jackrabbits. This decrease could be due to several things. One could be overhunting. So we would assume that we had these cyclical changes in climates, these wet periods, that could have relieved and helped the deer and jackrabbit large grain bounce back once, you know, from the drought periods, if they had declined because of drought. But there's other factors going on, because they're still decreasing even though there are wet periods and dry periods. Okay, so we have them decreasing. We have turkey increasing with increasing farming and increasing impact on the human impact on the landscape, growing populations, lots of turkey, and then the turkey decreases. So one reason turkey could be decreasing, other authors have said, well, we have corn and we feed that corn to turkeys, but if we have a lot of drought, then we can't supply that corn that we need to feed to the turkeys. So that could be one reason that turkeys decline and cottontails go up. And then cottontails could also decrease at the end because of garden hunting. So Schulemeyer and Driver suggested, well, they're at their little village, why not grab that? Okay. So what we have is we have growing human populations and growing impact on the landscape and changes in faunal resources. So over time, we have this could tell us about both the present and the future. So as we have in all culture, our culture, during changes of climate and other things that happen, we have cultural changes. And so this continuing drought that we're having, continual climate change that we have here in our society, could lead to changes in what resources we have available to us to eat. And then that could lead to other changes in the future. And then I'd like to thank, in our culture, in the future, I'd like to thank Dr. Lisa Nagaoka and Steve Wolverton for helping us put this together, and Crokane Archaeological Center for giving us the funnel remains to look at, and then our writing group here at UNT that helped us put it together.